Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from Fear the Sword and the Step Back. It's a Friday, so we're going to look ahead at the weekend. I will have a recap up of the Cavs' game against the Hawks that takes place later on Friday. I'll be at the game covering it for Fear the Sword, so might as well just record something of a game. And it could be a game where the Cavs move a little bit closer to clinching the number one seed officially. Today's show does look at the Cavs and the Hawks, who in the Cavs do play Atlanta twice this weekend. Brad Rowland from the Locked On Hawks podcast, from Dimag, from Peachtree Hoops is the guest, and him and I talked about the potential of these teams meeting in the playoffs, where Atlanta's going, where the Cavs' defense is at, all these different things. It was recorded prior to the Cavs' win over Boston, so it's a little without that context, but I think it's a really good conversation. Had a lot of fun, as always, talking to Brad, and I think you'll learn a lot about the Hawks and where they're at as well. Injury news, of course, Tristan Thompson will not play in this game, as he also missed Wednesday's game, and Paul Millsap will not play for the Hawks. So the Cavs are going to go have a home game with a day of rest against a team they do really well against, and that's missing their best player. Seems to me like this could be a recipe for success for the Cavaliers. So, hope you guys enjoyed today's show. I will, again, be back tomorrow. Please submit your mailbag questions into @LockedOnCavs on Twitter, to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com, or to on our Reddit page, and the Reddit page over at r/CleveandCavs, and drop your mailbag questions. I'd love to hear from anyone out there that has a question. It's going to be the last one we have before we get into the playoffs. I think that's the plan for now, at least. So, get those questions in, have your voice heard, and we'll do that show again on Monday. So thanks again. Hope you guys enjoy the show. Enjoy me talking to Brad. And we'll talk to you tomorrow on Saturday. Give you a little extra Lock On Cavs action this week.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99. And our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Chris Manning from Locked On Cavaliers.
I'm Brad Rowland from Locked On Hawks.
So it's a Locked On Network crossover, the Cavs and the Hawks, two teams that play Friday and then Sunday, one in Cleveland, one in Atlanta, and possibly could be playoff opponents for the third year in a row. Brad, before we get into the nitty-gritty details of these two teams, how would Atlanta fans feel about a third straight Cavs-Hawks playoff matchup?
I don't want to speak for everyone that's an Atlanta Hawks fan, but from most people that I've spoken to about this possibility, I've sort of dangled it on my Twitter account. Once I kind of became real to the fact that either Cleveland could fall out of the number one spot or Atlanta could sink down to as low as a 7 or 8 spot, it became very real to me. And I'm terrified as a Hawks supporter of it. I'm a little bit intrigued as someone who covers the team in at least somewhere close to an even-handed fashion, only because, you know, that's an interesting series, and because, you know, Cleveland's been struggling a little bit. I still have no confidence at all, but I think most people would be terrified more than anything, and a lot of PTSD moments with LeBron coming back to town would be probably the safest way to describe it.
Would it suck for Hawks fans too that, like, Korver would be on that team? Like, is that weird for them too?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm a huge Korver fan. I was okay with the trade. I know you and I talked about it when it happened, but I was okay with it from a team perspective. But I think it would be definitely weird to have Kyle on the other side in a playoff series, much less also the Hawks have the possibility of playing against the Raptors and another old friend in Amari Carroll being in the part of it. But I think Korver would be, you know, it's obviously fresher, and that would be, it'd be very strange to see Kyle, especially given the fact that Cleveland's three-point shooting has really been what's killed the Hawks in both of the last two playoff series, and Kyle is pretty good at that whole shooting thing when healthy. So yeah, it wouldn't be a lot of fun, but at the same time, I mean, I know me personally, I'd be rooting for Korver to succeed because I really like him and think he's a good guy, all that stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not really looking forward to that possibility, if only because the Hawks, I think, will struggle mightily again. We can get into that if you want.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Korver, you're right, shooting like 48% from three with the Cavs, which is just like, that's absurd.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, like his foot, like the foot thing with him is an issue, and I didn't really realize, I guess, that was something he had dealt with in Atlanta, and it's become more, I think, more of a consistent thing with him right now. It's something that he came back, missed seven games, came back, and then he missed another couple games as well. That to me is like, I didn't realize that was like a thing he dealt with in Atlanta, but it seems like it's something that had popped up before.
Yeah, I mean, you heard little bits and pieces. And look, Kyle's 36 years old, man. Like,
yeah.
As for as much as you know, his game obviously ages well because it's a lot of predicated on you know, defensively positioning and that kind of stuff. Him being sort of the bigger than average wing, but offensively just with his jump shot. But you know, 36 year old wings are going to get banged up, and Kyle's been banged up a little bit in the recent past. He does keep himself in fantastic shape, which helps, and he got the fight. He sort of had a full offseason before this year to kind of get his body ready, but not terribly shocked that he'd be battling that kind of issue, and hopefully it'll come, you know, even again, I'm rooting for Kyle to be healthy when this, if this playoff series happens, and just in general for the Cavs moving forward, because I'm rooting for Kyle. But yeah, not terribly surprised that he's battling some sort of, you know, I don't want to say, you know, ticky-tack stuff like that, but you know, it's stuff that sort of nags you more than anything else. And obviously this is a real injury, or he wouldn't be out for as long as he's been out at this point in time. But hopefully he'll be back and ready to go.
Yeah, switch to the Kyrie 3 in an effort to fix his foot. Like, needed a different shoe, went through different, because I think he was traditionally wearing low cut Nikes. I'm not sure like the specific like style or whatever, if they were like Kobe's or something, but he switched to like a high top Kyrie 3 that was built for Kyrie's, like guys like Kyrie that move a lot with their feet in terms of footwork and dribbling. And he has some supports, a kind of interesting little thing there, and NBA players in shoes. I like, it's crazy to think about like that. It's like a random thing, but they get like the shoes custom fit for their feet. So it's like, weird. Always was weird to me that you see guys like wear a different color pair of shoes. Like a lot of the top guys wear a different shoe like every night, but they're so fit to their feet that it doesn't matter. Like, it's just like, they're like custom fit. I wish I had that. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. I mean, going back to my very, very mediocre playing days, I can't imagine wearing a new pair of shoes every time I played. But I guess if it's just that set to what your foot's supposed to be and that's sort of built for you, it'd be a little bit different.
Yeah, imagine being super rich and athlete. But for the Cavs, I think like if you're looking at possible playoff opponents, and the bottom of the East right now is just like a mess. Like it is all over the place. The Hawks would, for me, not be the series I would want to see, just from an intrigue standpoint, just because with how the Cavs have played in March, with how the defense has looked, with the injuries of the team, I kind of think it might do them good to get pushed from the get-go. Like, I think you could make the argument that they need a series to just kind of, you know, like maybe run through and just have everything work, and the Hawks would, I think, in theory, like, offer that. It's worked that way last year. I think Atlanta's worse off this year. They're a little banged up and stuff. But I think, like, if I'm the Cavs, or if I'm just, like, observing the Cavs, I think it'd be more interesting to see them play Indiana. I think it'd be more interesting to see them play Milwaukee. I think, you know, I don't really care if they play the Bulls. Like, that to me, I mean, Butler would be interesting, but, like, that's a bad team objectively. Unless they're on TNT. You know, at home on TNT, 20 straight. That's the dumbest win streak in sports. You know, you have the Pistons that are still there. The Hornets are, you know, creeping up there again now. The Hawks would sort of be like this middle ground. And Cavs fans that I've talked to on Twitter and that I've had, like, on my, like, a couple of them that have been on the show, they would, like, they like, fantasize about getting the Hawks just because they're just like, oh, like, it'll be a slaughter in the first round. And that's something I think they think the Cavs could need. But as someone who's, like, watching the Cavs and wants to see how they would react to something a little bit more difficult, it doesn't interest me quite as much as it might have, you know, like, 2 years ago.
Yeah, I agree. Listen, I mean, I think we've also seen that series, and you know, at the end of the day, when you've seen a series twice and it's been as lopsided as it's been, granted the Hawks are very different now, and you know the Cavs are slightly different, mostly the same, I would say. But yeah, it's a series in which we kind of both know what we're going to expect in that series. You know, the Hawks could. I've sort of been joking about this offline with a couple of people who follow the Hawks closely, but it would not shock me if the Hawks won a game against the Cavs in a series this year, and a lot of Hawks fans would suddenly turn this into the situation where this team was quote unquote better than the previous one because they actually won a game against Cleveland, which would be insane because by any objective measure, this Hawks team is much worse than the last 2 years. But still, you know, I think if Cleveland tried in that series, there's little doubt in my mind that they would cruise past the Hawks. It's unfortunate from my perspective and my show's perspective that I can't imagine that series being overly competitive. So if I'm you, I would probably be looking forward to playing somebody new. But you know, if it's just a safety thing from actually winning this year, I'm wondering, like, just purely odds-wise in terms of winning a series, do you feel better about the Cavs beating the Hawks or somebody like Indiana? Because obviously from the intrigued perspective, I get it. But, you know, I guess it's still probably 90% or higher either way. But, you know, all things equal, would you rather play the Pacers or the Hawks or, I guess, the Bucks or the Bulls? Kind of rank those teams on what you think it would be like from just an absolute win percentage perspective.
So I think the Hawks would probably be the high out of those teams. I feel like the Bucks would be the hardest team to beat.
I would agree, by the way, from the Cavs perspective. I would not want to see Milwaukee if I had to choose.
Milwaukee's played them crazy tough all year. And they're sneakily, like, people. It's an uncomfortable conversation to have for me because I really like Jabari. But they've been better with Middleton. Like, Middleton's amazing, and he defends them, and it's harder to shuffle Kyrie around. And Giannis is just freaking incredible. Like, LeBron would have to guard him, and that pushes LeBron in situations that I don't know if he wants to, like, necessarily be in that early. I think Indiana's next just because, like, I tend to think Jimmy Butler at times, like, I waver on this sometimes, but I think Jimmy Butler is better than Paul George. Like, I don't know if that's, like, a bad take or anything because it flip-flops for me, but I think the Pacers have a better talent pool because of Miles Turner and because of, even though he's kind of a mess in a lot of ways, like Monta Ellis and like CJ Miles, like they have like good Jeff Teague, they have good players. The Bulls just like don't have that many good players, you know, like, and they fall there. But then Atlanta, it's just if Paul Millsap's healthy, I would be more interested in seeing the Cavs play the Hawks in terms of them getting pushed than the Bulls. Like, I just don't think the Bulls are actually that good. And the Cavs are, you know, 0-4 against them this year, and they just had that weird game on TNT, but like, aside from Butler, like, I just don't know what the Bulls do that actually makes the Cavs feel threatened. And at least if you're Atlanta, Schroeder is probably going to make Kyrie have to defend. Millsap's really, really good. Dwight's going to push Tristan because Dwight's been, you know, had like a good year. That to me would be like, even if it's the same thing, I would be more intrigued in that than seeing them play the Bulls. Like, I don't really like get any, like, there's nothing to me of that Bulls series that would actually be like worth watching, aside from Butler and LeBron going at it.
Yeah, I'm with you kind of on all that. I think, you know, from the Hawks' perspective, I think the team isn't necessarily they're obviously worse, as I just said, this year than they have been in the past. But against the Cavs, you know, we've seen them play twice this year. The Hawks split 1-1, and the other game was a pretty close, you know, actually it was 135-130, which is hilarious in retrospect because the Hawks are really bad offensively, and they scored 130 and still lost in that game against the Cavs in early March. But, yeah, I think – you know, the Cavs are going to have no problem beating the Hawks if that series happens, unfortunately, for both of us from an analysis perspective. There's not a whole lot going on that's interesting there. But I do think that Dwight Howard has a, you know, if not a better matchup against the Cavs than Al Horford did, at least you kind of know that you're not going to get absolutely murdered on the glass by Tristan Thompson in the way that he did against Horford in the past. But, you know, that series isn't too much fun. And personally, from the Hawks' perspective, I'm rooting for anybody but Cleveland in that first-round series from it's just a simple standpoint of being able to talk myself into at least a competitive series. I think there's a scenario in which the Hawks are at least competitive and can force a long series against, you know, Boston or Toronto, maybe even Washington if they play well. But against Cleveland, I just can't imagine the Hawks actually making that an interesting series beyond maybe a couple of close games. I don't want to be too negative there. And obviously, we're going to see these teams play against each other twice in a period of 3 days here. And, you know, made no mistake, I'm sure you've been talking about this on your podcast. Cleveland's kind of a mess right now. But at the same time, you know, they have LeBron and they have the most talented roster in the East. And I mean, for me, I'm sure you talk about it all the time, but for me, I'm still abjectly terrified if I'm the rest of the East about Cleveland, even in their sort of state that they're in right now.
Yeah, man. Like, there are people, and I'm not going to like name of this, but like there's people that I'll see, like particularly in a certain fan base. You can probably guess what fan base it is because they're a certain very homery fan base. But
oh, I'm ready for it. Bring the takes.
Oh yeah, like Celtics Twitter is like convinced. There's a members of Celtics Twitter that are convinced that like the Celtics are gonna like make the finals. And like, look, like the Boston's pretty good, but like Al Horford's gonna, if Tristan's good to go and like Love and all that stuff, he's gonna struggle in that series. They're gonna have a rebounding issue. I think Isaiah's gonna get like really hunted down in that series, and if he gets pushed off the floor because he just gets ripped apart defensively by Kyrie, like what do you do for offense as much without him? Like he is their engine, and if you lose him at all because he struggles defensively, like I think that's a big question for me about Boston. And I don't really think any of those guys are actually gonna slow down LeBron. Like I think there are a core group of LeBron stop, like quote unquote stoppers in the NBA: Draymond, Kawhi, Jimmy Butler, Paul George. Crowder is close, but he's not quite, like, I don't think he's quite strong enough, and I don't think he has, like, he's very strong, but I don't know if he's, like, the right combination of, like, pure strength and the quickness to really handle LeBron. He hasn't done it in the past. Like, LeBron at full go is gonna, like, torch them, and I think the Cavs will figure out enough defensively where they're gonna be fine in the East. Like, I don't think any of those teams in the East, I think Washington out of all those teams actually, because I would say Toronto, but it's, like, is Lowry gonna be healthy? You know, like, I don't really think Lowry, we don't know yet if he's going to be good to go for the whole playoffs. Because even if he comes back and he says he's good, is he going to be good right away? Like, there's a lot of questions there for me. But, the, I mean, the march for the Cavs has been kind of bad. But then it's like they're like, over 5 points. Still, like, fourth best in the league when LeBron is on the floor. Like, their point differential when LeBron is on the floor in March still had them amongst, like, the elite teams in the league. Like, it's weird. But I don't really see any of those teams in the East as, like, actually being threats, and I don't think it's going to be, like, one thing that undoes them either. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, the defense is a problem, and that's true, but I think it'd be, you know, like, Love and Korver and J.R. Smith not getting back to their best version of themselves. LeBron's minutes catching up to him, the defense being an issue, continuity issues, you know, just having older offensive first personnel. I think it'd be all those things would sort of have to break right for them to lose in the East. And I think they'd be underdogs in the finals if they play Golden State and maybe against San Antonio too. But I don't think there's a team in the East, like, if the Cavs are, everything is sort of working or most of everything is working, that I think actually can take them down. Like, there's all those takes that they're going to lose. And I'm just like, until it happens, I don't really believe it.
That, yeah, that's where I am too. To be honest, obviously you see the team closer than I do on a daily basis, but I'm with you all the way on that. I mean, from a regular season perspective, these two games that we're about to watch between the Hawks and the Cavs, the Hawks really need to get at least one of these two. That's sort of a tall task considering the way that they played against the Cavs in the recent past, of course. But the Hawks really need kind of everyone they can get at this point in time. Do you think do you think Cleveland's going to be trying in these games? Obviously, the second half of the back-to-back for the Hawks play Cleveland a second game of back-to-back on Friday, and then they play sort of a quick turnaround. It's not like, not a back-to-back between the two teams, but a Sunday afternoon game after a Friday night game. You think the Cavs are going to be trying, at least like playing everybody in both these games because of the fact that, you know, the Hawks need this game, and the Cavs really don't. I mean, I guess for the number one seed they do, but in terms of, you know, in reality, I'm not sure how much that matters, but it definitely matters for the Hawks.
I think, I don't really think it matters, like, if they win the number one seed. Like, I just don't really think it matters too much. I think the East at the top is better this year, so I think they're going to have a tougher second-round series this year than they did, like, 2 years ago. You know, I think that's just going to happen unless, you know, like, Milwaukee upsets the Wizards in the 4-5 or something like that, you know? I don't think, like, that's certainly on the table. I think they need, like, good games and they matter just because, A, I don't think they're going to rest anybody, and B, I think they do need just have some things go right. Like, even when they beat the Pacers in double overtime, you had the LeBron, Tristan Thompson dust up where there's the very bad looking screaming match. Lou really supporting Thompson in that exchange, like saying it was Thompson was right. I think they just need a game where, like, there's no drama. Like, I think they could just use it, and I think they could have a game where they just kind of look good defensively for a whole game. Indiana had a lot of moments where they pushed the Cavs defense in interesting ways, and they made things uncomfortable. The Hawks can do some of that. If Millsap's good to go and is healthy, he's going to create some problems for Kevin Love. I think they need a game where they get pushed and respond, and it works through. And I think getting two wins like that would be good. Because, I mean, the end of the regular season for them is Atlanta. You play Toronto in the last game of the year. If they're going to actually go for the number one seed, and Lou has indicated that they're not going to rest LeBron, every game sort of matters in that chase.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think it's set up about as poorly for the Hawks as possible, to be honest, because the Hawks have this home game against the Celtics on Thursday evening, and then they go to Cleveland on Friday. So it's already a road game, and now it's the second game of back-to-back against the Cavs team that had the day off previously. That's a bad spot for the Hawks. And then they do get the Sunday afternoon home game, in which you kind of hope maybe the Cavs go out in Atlanta on Saturday night and get sort of an early tip-off, and that might swing things to Atlanta's favor. But again, I think this game matters more in terms of the standings to the Hawks, because, listen, as of the time that we're recording this podcast, the Hawks have a chance to miss the playoffs still, which is sort of inexplicable, to be honest. But it's definitely in play. The Hawks are more likely than not going to make the playoffs, but still they have a chance if they were to lose out, which is again weirdly possible, to miss the playoffs. So, you know, if you figure the Hawks are going to be underdogs in both these games, and they should be, because the Cavs are better. Even when the Cavs are struggling, the Cavs are better than the Hawks. But you know, if you're a Hawks fan, you're just hoping that you're hoping for a split, and it's most likely going to come in the form of that Sunday afternoon, sort of a weird spot NBA TV game, 3:30 at Phillips Arena, and hopefully maybe Atlanta can steal that one if you're trying to be as positive as possible.
Yeah, I mean, if you're getting the Cavs in Atlanta, which is a fun NBA player city.
Like especially on a Sunday afternoon, man. Yeah. Don't sleep on Atlanta nightlife on Saturday. That's a huge advantage for the Hawks.
JR's gonna come in. You know, I mean, he's married and he's got kids now and stuff. But like, come on, JR. You know, JR Smith. We saw the finals videos. JR's gonna have some fun in Atlanta on Saturday. All joking aside, like, I'm actually really curious about this, because Atlanta 2 years ago win 60 games. Last year they're still really good. Then you lose Horford. This year has been, you know, a lot of things. Budenholzer, you know, the Schroeder stuff, like. Regardless, to make the playoffs, like, does it one way or the other, does what actually, where they end up, do you think that changes their plan for the offseason? Like, let's say they miss the playoffs, would their decision then actually be different than what it would be if they made the playoffs?
I would hope not. I would hope they would have already decided, and frankly, I would hope that they would already have moved away from this, maybe not this full core, but I think, you know, seeing how badly this has gone late, and, you know, they had the built-in sort of excuse with Paul Millsap being out for some time, but even before that, this team had a negative point differential for the season, so I think hopefully the Hawks have seen enough of this full team to note that, like, bringing the whole band back together next year would not be the most inspiring choice in the world. You know, they had this interesting decision with Paul Millsap because of the fact that he's going to be 30, he's already 32 years old, facing a big time contract in the offseason. And for me, you know, my listeners are probably laughing right now because I've kind of been talking about this all the time. But I think it's definitely time to move on from this particular setup. If I'm the Hawks, you know, last year they won only 48 games, but had a point differential of a 51 win team. This year they have they're over 500 at this moment, despite the fact they have a negative point differential. And but their expected one loss right now is 35-42 based on their net rating. That's a bad basketball team. I mean, and again, some of that is Paul Millsap being out, but most of it isn't. And for me, this is a non-inspiring product, and it's time to it's sort of a question of whether you want to go with the full-blown rebuild or you want to do the Hawks rebuild, which is basically to maybe tweak a thing here or there and just try to remain competitive as long as possible, because I think weirdly the Hawks want to be competitive. I mean, obviously it's not weird to want to be a playoff team, but the Hawks, I think, take some pride in being the team in the East with the longest playoff streak, and this is a market that basically does not want to rebuild from there's a lot of people that are like me, but there are more people that are not like me that want to just see this team be as good as they possibly can in the short term, and they're not really worried as much about the ultimate ceiling to the way that I am. So long story short, I think that, you know, I would hope this team's already made the decision, but, you know, for me, maybe it does matter. I mean, it's a lot easier, I guess, to blow it up if you miss the playoffs. So if you're a blow it up guy like I am, I won't say that I'm rooting for the Hawks to miss the playoffs, but I think it would be more likely that they blew it up if they were to somehow, you know, lose the last five games here and miss the playoffs after starting as well as they did early on. But I think either way, it's time to do it. I'm not sure that they're actually going to.
I would be very intrigued by a Hawks blow up, because it could go, you know, you could go full nuclear. Like, you know, you could find somewhere to dump Dwight. Like, you could.
Well, it's really tough because of the fact that you have Dwight, not necessarily Dwight. You know, Dwight's contract by itself is not that bad, because Dwight's played pretty well this year, but at the same time, he's a guy that'd be very, very difficult to trade because of the fact that he's Dwight Howard. He has that rep of a guy you probably don't want to have around during a rebuild. So if the Hawks wanted to rebuild, you don't want Dwight around during that, I don't think, based on his personality and his age and his contract. It's not a guy you probably want around. And then you have Kent Bazemore, too. And while that contract is not prohibitive necessarily, you don't really want to be paying a guy on the wing who's sort of a supporting piece, you know, $17.5-18 million a year on a rebuilding team. That's not the greatest move in the world. So the Hawks have to do a lot of work to do the full-blown tank mode. It's just kind of tough because they also don't have a ton of these like premium assets either. You know, aside from the two rookies they drafted this last year, who I like both of those guys, and Dennis Schroeder, that's really your entire young core. Everybody else is either older or going to be a free agent this summer. So yeah, that's it's a really sort of a rough spot and not an easy plan to make either way. Even if they want to go in or if they want to go out for next year, there's some tweaks that have to be done in both directions.
Yeah, and I would be intrigued by what they could do, because like, I mean, I feel like they like Schroeder, but you would probably need, like, he's not like your franchise guy, like he's just not. I would be intrigued by, because I think there's like a lot of, like, this is a tangent, but I think there's a sneaky number of really, really interesting NBA off seasons coming up. The Bulls have one, the Pacers have one, the Hornets have one, the Hawks have one, the Celtics kind of have to have one by virtue of everything that they still have in their cabinet with, you know, and potentially getting a guy like Markel Fultz, like the Lakers, like there's just the Clippers, like there's just that with so many interesting off seasons, and like even the Warriors, like, I mean, they're probably not gonna like lose KD or anything like that, or lose Steph, because that would just be kind of crazy, but like they have all these things they have to do. If like KD doesn't take that 1 year deal, they have to clear all these like salary. Like the NBA this summer could be kind of crazy in a lot of ways with those things, and the Hawks would sort of proceed to me, like if a team decides they want to like win. Like, you could probably maybe talk the right, like, one, you always have to just talk one GM into Dwight Howard. Or, like, one team into Ken Bazemore's contract, you know? Like, and then you could, it's not that hard to pull off. And you might not get, like, a top five pick in a good draft, but you could get maybe a good young player. And then, like, you start that way. And it's not like the East is, like, hard to make the playoffs. Like, maybe you could mitigate, maybe you could, like, combine those two goals in some way.
Yeah, it's really, there's this, as you mentioned, there's a lot of intriguing options, but I think the Hawks are actually pretty high on the list.
They're top five for me, I think, honestly, because there's just, you just don't know.
Yeah, it's going to give me a lot of content opportunities as the offseason moves forward. But no, listen, it's interesting in the fact that it could be very uninteresting if the Hawks just sign Paul Millsap and sign Tim Hardaway Jr. and do nothing else, which is a possibility that they become extremely boring in a hurry, like to a maddening degree, because they'll just be this, you know, 42-win team again next year if they do that. Maybe with a little bit of upper mobility if guys like Torian Prince come along, and if you get another year out of Schroeder improving. But in a hurry, they can get very interesting if they want to blow things up. And obviously, you know, that means probably being bad or at least pretty bad next year. But you know, Mike Budenholzer is a good coach. I think we've seen him coach up a negative asset team. His first year in Atlanta, Al Horford got hurt within the first couple of weeks of the season, and he still got that team into the playoffs when they had no business making the playoffs. So you've seen what he can do. I'm not saying that he can suddenly be some sort of, you know, miracle worker, but having a top 10-ish coach on your bench really helps. The problem is he's also your GM, so again, that also plays into the fact that GM's the wrong title. He's actually the director, sorry, you know, president of basketball operations, but he's the final say guy, and that makes it more difficult again to rebuild. So a lot of different themes that are going across here, but in the end, I think the Hawks are going to have this decision to make pretty quickly, because even if they face somebody that's not Cleveland in the first round of the playoffs, I have a hard time imagining the Hawks playing beyond beyond the end of April, we should say. So I don't know. We'll have to talk about this stuff for too much longer before it becomes actual reality.
Yeah. Let me ask you this: let's say they make the playoffs. Let's say they play Boston or, you know, Toronto in the first round. What percentage chance, roughly, would you give them of actually pulling a first round upset?
It depends on who they play, to be honest. I think, you know, against the Cavs, it's basically the chance that LeBron gets hurt. That's the only way that they're going to beat the Cavs. That sounds negative, but still. Aside from that, I think they have a puncher's chance against one of the other three teams. I would rank Washington as the most difficult matchup for the Hawks, provided Washington is healthy. I don't think the Hawks have much of a chance in that series, maybe like a 10-15% chance of actually winning that series, versus, you know, Toronto's played good defense recently, to the point where they're actually looking a little scarier than I thought. And if they can get Kyle Lowry back, I think, I don't know, for me, Boston's the team that I'd like to see the Hawks play if I want the Hawks to have the best chance of winning, which sounds funny because Boston's the number one seed at this moment that we're talking, but Boston's a team that's sort of like the Hawks have been in the past, where they're extremely good in the regular season, they're extremely well coached, but their talent is not prohibitive. They're much more of a team that's built for the regular season, and that they're deep and talented, but not like overly so, and when they shorten the rotation, rotation. They're not going to get much better in a way that a lot of other teams would when they shorten the rotation. So I think, you know, the Hawks have played the Celtics well at times. Again, you know, Boston would still be a significant favorite in that series, and I can't imagine the Hawks actually winning that series. But that's probably their best chance, in my opinion, is if they actually play Boston, which sounds funny because again, they're the number one seed. But that's the team I actually would want to see if I'm the Hawks. So a 1-8 matchup against Boston is very, very preferable to a 2-7 against Cleveland or a 3-6 against Washington.
It'd be hilarious if the Hawks beat the Celtics. Hilarious.
It would be very funny. Again, I don't think it's going to happen, but it's like, you know, odds wise, I'd much rather see Boston as a 1-8. And, you know, the fact that, you know, it's tough to see a scenario where that happens, but, you know, with the problems that Isaiah Thomas has had in the playoffs, and he's kind of their own. If you stop Isaiah Thomas for Boston's offense, they become very, very ordinary in a hurry. And I think they're better this year without Horford. There's some things that they're better at, obviously, across the board than they've been in years past. And I like Brad Stevens, but that's not a team that's just going to blow you. Like, you know, Boston's not going to be some sort of like 10-1 favorite over the Hawks in the first round series in Vegas. That's not going to happen. They're going to be like a 3-1, 4-1 favorite, which is still significant, but in terms of 1-8 seeds, you know, if Cleveland's the one seed against like the number 8 seeded like Bulls or the Hawks, they're going to be like a 15-1 favorite. But if it's Boston, they're going to be like a 4-1 favorite, and that's still big, but it's not like crazy anymore.
Yeah. Is there anything from like watching the Hawks beat the Celtics last year that like you saw that like teams are going to probably do again to Isaiah in the playoffs? Because I can't honestly remember like how good it, like if he had a big series or not last year.
He didn't really. There were moments in which he had, you know, sort of explosive sections of games, but in general, I think the Hawks did a pretty good job on him. I think the book on Isaiah is to put a bigger guy on him, a little bit rangier. If you have one of those, you know, bigger, you know, maybe shooting guards who can actually cover point guards. Like, I think if the Hawks played against the Celtics in a playoff series, you'd see a lot of either Kent Bazemore or Tabitha Felosha on Isaiah Thomas. At least in the case of Bazemore, he's not really like a lockdown guy, but he's at least quick enough and big enough so he might be able to bother Thomas. And, you know, this year, Boston's offense is a little bit more dangerous because of the fact that they have Al Horford and they have, you know, five guys on the court at a time who can all kind of beat you in different ways. But in the end, we've seen how vulnerable they can be when Thomas is ordinary. And he's been awesome this year. There's no question about it. Like, he's been better than I ever thought he'd be offensively. But still, I think if you can limit him to even a reasonable degree, Boston becomes a lot more beatable. And, you know, if Atlanta sees them, I think they would be wise to take Dennis Schroeder off of him. Those guys don't like each other very much, Thomas and Schroeder. So you see a lot of storylines about Thomas and Schroeder going one-on-one. But in the end, I think the Hawks will probably take, and a lot of other teams are probably going to do this as well. I think if Cleveland plays Boston in a series, you're going to see some fourth quarters where you might see LeBron on Isaiah for, you know, at times, at least occasionally, maybe in big spots. And that seems like a crazy matchup considering LeBron is literally a foot taller than Isaiah. But that might happen at some time because, you know, in the end, LeBron is still Cleveland's, you know, ultimate stopper, I would imagine. I mean, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but
no, I think on a one
possession standpoint, like with the game on the line, I think you come out and you'd see LeBron on Isaiah.
I think you're right. I think if the Cavs like got in that situation where they had to just like go full defensive or on LeBron, like it's a little different than last year because you don't have Deli and stuff. And it's sort of one thing I'm kind of intrigued to see what they would do. But I think it would have to, and I'd love to hear your take on their defensive issues in this as well. But I think it'd be like LeBron. I think it'd be JR. I think it would be Shumpert.
It's not going to be Kyrie. I can almost guarantee you that.
No,
I mean,
yeah.
Like, I mean,
yeah.
Maybe occasionally, but like I can't see Kyrie being a full blown assignment on Isaiah. And you know, rightfully,
he'd guard Avery Bradley, I think. But I think if they like went full defense in that series, you'd be like LeBron, Shumpert, JR, RJ, and Thompson. I think that's what they would do. And I think that actually, because Boston could go two bigs, I guess, but like their best lineups are when they get like super mobile and aren't like Horford as a five and like Crowder as some four, I guess. Like, but I guess like Olynyk and stuff and Amir help them too, because they do need, like, they're not a good rebounding team. And the Cavs with Thompson,
no.
Like, that's a really, like, he's a better offensive rebounder than he's a defensive rebounder, but like he's still probably going to do well against Horford in that matchup.
Well, yeah, that's the one thing about, I mean, I will go to my grave talking about how Al Horford's been a center his entire life, because he has been. But
yes,
the one thing that, you know, if Al Horford is playing center, is that you're not going to be a good rebounding team. I love Al Horford, but he is not a good rebounder. That's the one thing that he is deficient at on the basketball court. He can do everything else at an above average level. He's a bad rebounding center. So, I mean, there's only so much you can do. I mean, it'd be very difficult to field a team that is even an average rebounding team with Al Horford at your center. So we'll say that off the top. And because of the way that Cleveland is just bludgeoned teams led by Al Horford in Atlanta on the glass, that's probably going to happen again if they want it to. You know, if Cleveland decides that that's their game plan, they want to beat them up inside, they're going to do that. And the same thing will go for other teams. If even a team like Washington, if Boston and Washington play, or if Boston and Toronto play, you're going to see them load up on the interior and try to offensive rebound Boston to death too, because that's the scouting report when you play against Al Horford in the playoffs. It's just to attack them on the glass. It's going to happen. So we'll see what Boston does to adjust to that when the time comes. But even Atlanta this year, I think if Atlanta played Boston, you're going to see a ton of Dwight Howard just flooding the offensive glass, and it's going to infuriate me if that happens, because people are going to start talking about how Dwight Howard's better than Al Horford, which is just not true. But hey, it's going to happen, and that's the smart thing to do, because that's Al's deficiency.
Yeah, 100%. Let's wrap it up on this. I just want to ask you one. I've been asking everybody this. The Cavs' defense has been awful, like in March. You know, like almost as bad as the Lakers, who were just actively trying to lose with the young players to like keep their pick. Do you think that the defense is A, that actually going to be that bad in the playoffs, and B, how big of a problem do you think that it is?
It's a problem, I would say, but only if they – I think there's at least possible that Cleveland flips the switch. I think it's pretty safe to assume that they won't be as good in the playoffs defensively right away as they were last year by the end, only because I don't think you can flip the switch completely to suddenly be – to go from being an objectively bad defense to being an awesome one overnight. It's just not going to happen. But Cleveland has that whole – probably that first-round series and maybe even a second series, depending on who they play, to sort of ratchet it up defensively. I think personnel-wise, there's a reason to think that Cleveland might not be as good this year, especially if they're playing a guy like Kyle Korver, who I've always defended defensively, but at this point, he's definitely a below-average defender. I don't think he's a horrific one necessarily, but it's still not a very good defensive player. And if he's in your rotation now ahead of a guy like maybe, you know, Shump or JR, who are both defensive, you know, better defensive players, obviously those guys are going to play also, but if he's taking minutes over a guy who would have been a better defender, that's going to hurt your defense. Plus, you have to hide Kyrie, et cetera, et cetera. Kyrie's defense in the playoffs has always been better than a regular season, at least from my eyes. Maybe you don't agree.
Because he actually cares.
Well, yeah, because he tries.
Which is a problem. Like if you're gonna like evaluate him in the regular season, but like, and I'm not one of the Cavs people that's just gonna be like, oh, like, you know, like it doesn't, like you can't evaluate him on that because like it matters.
It does. I mean, and I talk about it all the time. I mean, I've gotten in trouble with Cavs fans. You know, my boy Justin Rowan hates me for whenever I go on Kyrie's defense.
Look, Justin has the most trash tweets in the world. I love you, Justin.
He does. I love Justin, too. He's been on my podcast several times. But no, it's I think there's a whole different analysis with like evaluating Kyrie as a player versus like what Kyrie can be when he tries. It's a different discussion. I think his baseline defensively is bad, and he's again not the biggest reason, or at least not the only reason why Cleveland struggles defensively right now. But I think him trying harder, you know, LeBron trying hard defensively is going to happen in the playoffs because it always does. It's not, you know, it's symptomatic because I think they know deep down that they don't have to try right now. When the time comes, you expect them to flip the switch. The question becomes, can they do it in a hurry, or will it take them a while to figure it out? But I'm not terribly worried about Cleveland's defense, even if I think all they have to do is defend at like a top, you know, 10 to 12-ish level and just not be bad defensively, and they'll be fine.
Yeah, especially if they have an uptick in offense as well. You know, like if they can, they've been really good on offense all year, but if they get closer to like where the Warriors or the Rockets are at, which I think is possible, you can probably get by more with the defense. And I would also just note, I think like you, the losing Delly and I think losing Mozgov have hurt. But I think if you get to Game 7 of the Finals and you're playing Golden State again, you have the same personnel that won you the Finals last year. Like, functionally, the rotation of Game 7 is still in the team. Like, Delly was not playing in Game 7, Game 6, Game 5, really. Mozgov was a non-factor once the playoffs started. You still have Richard Jefferson, you still have Tristan Thompson, you still have LeBron, who's still very, very good. You have Kyrie, you have Love, you have Shumpert and JR, and you have Korver, who I think adds his shooting is going to be really, really important in that series. Like, I think I'm very curious to see once it gets down to it, if like that ultimately wins out opposed to them being really bad right now. Like, I'm very curious if this is like a case study of like, okay, if you're bad in the regular season, but your 7-man rotation, 8-man rotation in a tight final series is going to matter, and you have a guy like LeBron as this like ultimate variable, I wonder, like, I'm very curious to see how that unfolds against a team like Golden State that is just a juggernaut no matter how you spin it.
Yeah, I do worry about Kyle in that series defensively.
I think he can defend Iggy, but Iggy's been like incredible for like 2 weeks. Like he's been incredible the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, and actually, I think like that was like a sneaky decent matchup for Korver because Korver is still super strong and big. I think people forget how big he is as a wing. Like he's a legit 6'7" and a half, 6'8".
I was shocked how big he was when I first like saw him in the locker room and like talked to him. Like I was like, oh, I didn't realize you were like this big of a guy.
Yeah, I always talk about that from the same thing for being in the locker. I think people just think, you know, he's a white shooter.
He's a white shooter, yeah.
Which is fine, and that's all true. I mean, he is what he is in some respects, but he's a legitimate, like, 6'7" and a half, 6'8", and stocky. Like, he's very strong, and because Iggy's not going to blow by you anymore at this point in his career off the dribble, that's a playable defensive matchup, as well as Ian Clark. I think you can hide Korver a little bit. And to some degree, I think Korver's going to be your eighth or ninth man anyway. He's not going to play more than definitely not more than 20 minutes a night in that series. So it really won't matter in the end, at least not to a massive degree. But, yeah, listen, we're gonna ahead of ourselves a little bit there. But I know you've been looking forward to that series all year, and a lot of us have, so I don't blame you. I wish I had something to look forward to that was that promising if I was as someone who supports the Hawks. But, alas, maybe we'll get there eventually. And I'm sure I'm going to get killed for being too negative on the show about the Hawks. But, alas, here we are.
No lie, though, I miss covering the draft. Like, I miss having a reason to, like, pay attention to the draft. Because I find it really interesting and fun.
I love the draft too. And last year, like I was blessed when we with like a two or three day span where I actually had two draft picks to talk about because of the Jeff Teague trades and the Hawks picking twice in the first round. So that was a lot of fun. But this year, only one. But actually, you know, the Hawks have two picks in 2018 and two picks in 2019, courtesy of the Cavs with that second first round in 2019. So should be a lot of fun moving forward to cover the draft. I probably would be covering the finals though, if I'm honest.
No, I mean that's true, but like I just the Cavs years that I like started blogging about the team were like the crappy Dion. Like the first draft lottery I think I wrote about was the year that they got Dion. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, shouts to Dion Waiters while we're here.
Incredible. Always, I mean, always shouts to Dion. Like Dion Waiters is like the most incredible thing ever. Like I love Dion so much. Like
I really don't like Dion. Oh, I've come around to the entertainment factor with Dion. Like I always really, really, really didn't like him. But now it's like to the point where I just don't care anymore and I just find
it's
him,
so fun.
Him.
It's so fun.
So I've come around.
I can't wait to I'm gonna feel really bad though when like the Sixers give him like way too much money this summer. Like it's just like Colangelo gonna be like giving like the hometown like $80-90 million contract or something dumb and I'm just gonna laugh.
And the process people, Michael Levine will just like have the biggest like vein popping out of his head of all time if that happens.
R.I.P. Max
Rapoport too. Yeah, it's going to be awful if they overpay anybody this summer, much less Dion. So
yeah, it'd be so really fun. I'd still laugh.
For sure.
Dion forever. But yeah, man, this has been fun. Hopefully, we'll do this in the playoffs again, and maybe the Hawks, if they miss the playoffs, they'll like win the lottery, like screw over the Celtics, and like get Markelle Fultz. Maybe that'll all work out.
I would not object to that at all if the Hawks had one ping pong ball with the being number 9 in the East and somehow won. That would be extremely non-Hawks because the Hawks are not lucky enough to have that pull off. But I would be here for it, my friend. But yeah, we'll definitely talk as the playoffs approach, especially if the Hawks end up playing the Cavs. We'll probably do a couple of these, absolutely. I would imagine. And I'll probably be weeping for half of them, but it would be fun.
All right, man. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Chris.